You're listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information about Vineyard Milwaukee, go to vineyardmilwaukee.com. Now, here's our podcast.
Is there anyone in the room that grew up watching the show Cheers? Okay. So, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, because you're way too young, I love the opening of Cheers. There was this kind of heavy-set middle-aged guy that would walk in to the bar, which Cheers was a bar in Boston, and the whole room would yell, yes, so that's how Cheers, the opening to Cheers, right? And I love the opening song to Cheers. So again, if you are too young or never watched Cheers, I'll just read you a few lines. It says, making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see your troubles are all the same. You want to be where everyone knows your name. So they're always glad you came. Isn't that a great feeling? Like, have you ever walked into a party or a gathering or a work thing or whatever, and everyone was like, hey, Rebecca's here. And maybe like someone got up and gave you a hug, and you were just greeted with delight at your presence. And if you've been blessed enough to have that experience, how did that make you feel? Yeah, loved, right? Wanted, enjoyed. Or I'm guessing some of you may have had the opposite experience, where you've showed up at some kind of gathering or work thing or party, and maybe no one even really noticed your arrival. Like, you kind of walked in, everyone's just like, you know, quick glance and just went back to whatever they were doing, or worse, they like noticed you and then like a couple people got that sort of like rolled eyes, annoyed look at you. Like, that's actually happened to me too. I've had both these experiences, and I imagine you've had similarly kinds of experiences where sometimes you walk into a space and you feel right away wanted and enjoyed, and other times you either feel unwanted or worse, just completely ignored and as if you didn't even exist. And this is kind of the way the world works, doesn't it? I mean, one day you start your day with, you start your morning with a look of disdain from your middle schooler as you drop him off to school, and then you go to get a cup of coffee and your barista's all bright and happy to see you, and they know your name and they know how you take your coffee, and then you get to work and your boss, like, right away reprimands you for getting something in late, or later in the day, you overhear colleagues talking about a happy hour event that you're not invited to, and it's just like that, where sometimes we feel enjoyed and wanted, and sometimes we don't. We feel excluded or rejected or that we're annoying. And because we live in a broken world, we don't often receive all these warm, gracious responses, do we? And often, even if we do, we tend to internalize the negative ones a little more than the positive, don't we? Those are the ones, at least in my brain, that I tend to ruminate on versus all the moments that I have felt wanted or loved or celebrated. You know, I remember when Caleb and Abigail were little, my oldest, my 20-year-old, and my daughter, who is 17, she was just about a toddler or preschooler, and he was probably around 4 or 5. And we were just at the mall one day, and many of you know my daughter's disabled, so she's nonverbal. And so at that age, she just looked like this beautiful, serene, quiet little girl in a stroller. And so she frequently, people would, oh, she's so cute. Or sometimes some people might discover she's disabled. And so she would often get these very, like, big smiles, right? Like, people, like, greeting her with a big smile, noticing her, showing a lot of affection toward her. Whereas my son was a kind of rambunctious, loud, often out of control little preschooler that I was often having to reprimand. And so he wasn't always receiving those positive, warm responses from myself or the world. And so one day he just pipes up and's like, Mom, how come everyone is always smiling at Abigail? And like, you're always like, hi, Abigail. But you're like, you're kind of mean face at me. And I was like, heartbroken, like that. I mean, I was totally unconscious that this was even happening. And so I had to become really conscious of regularly smiling at Caleb and showing positive responses to him. And then even sometimes I had to occasionally like put Abigail on a timeout and like, you know, reprimand her to kind of, you know, because at this very early age, he was taking in these responses from the world. And you start to form your sense of self and how you're going to show up in the world based on all these responses you're getting from other people. And so at a very young age, Caleb's doing this and already making a comparison. Like, everyone seems to like her, and people don't always like me. And you're already, like, very early on doing this. Does this sound familiar? I mean, this starts young, and we do this our whole lives. This is the human experience. So we sense when we're wanted and we're celebrated and enjoyed and when we're not. And then we have to put meaning on all these responses. And so we begin to kind of shape and form our identity around this. And then as a result, we often tend to hustle for our worthiness or for acceptance or for love. And I think you're like, I thought we were talking about joy today. We are. Because as I was pondering joy and what often robs us of our joy, I think this is often the case. It's this hustling for acceptance, for love, for wanting to be celebrated and enjoyed that actually robs us of our joy. You know, Emmy just read the verse about the angels in the sky announcing Jesus' arrival. And they announce it by saying, great joy. This is something to celebrate. This is going to bring great joy to the world. And so I've thought about this. What was bringing the great joy? Well, it was Jesus entering into our space, right? It was the light coming into the darkness. And so what keeps us, as people that know this story and have a relationship with Jesus, from experiencing joy? Because often, I know a lot of followers of Jesus, including myself, that often lack joy in their lives. And so there's a lot written about joy, about practices of gratitude you can do, and joy journals, and ways to celebrate, and you can there's a life-giving list you can make that I learned about. And I think all of these practices are really good and will increase joy in your life. But I think there can be a deeper thing, a deeper barrier to us living joyful lives. And so as I was praying about this, this is what God was stirring up in my heart. And I'm just to be clear, I'm not talking about a life that is free from struggle or pain, because that's not possible. In this world, you will have trouble, as Jesus said. So it's not possible as a human being to not experience pain. But I'm talking about someone whose life is formed in heavenly joy in a way that they seem anchored by it, in a way that leads them to easily celebrate and that draws them to worship with gratitude. And they flow with grace for others. It's a joyful life. So regardless of their circumstances, they carry a capacity for joy because they have been transformed by it and are being formed in it. And so what I want to talk about today is the reason I think we sometimes struggle to lay hold of this kingdom joy is because often we're focused so much on our experience of God and the measure of joy based on our relationship with God rather than focusing on how God is experiencing and enjoying us. And so I want to look today at a story that we've preached on many times. If you grew up in church, you've heard a million times. I'm going to be talking about the story of the prodigal son today. But what I want you to consider when you're listening to it is the father's posture toward his son. Because I think if we could lay hold of the father's joy that he has over us, we may grow in our capacity to experience kingdom joy while living in a very difficult and broken world. So look with me at this story found in Luke. I forgot to write the chapter down. I think it's 15. It's 15? Yeah, there we go. All right, starting with verse 11. So Jesus continued. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." Have you ever considered that you delight the heart of the Father? That you bring joy to God's heart? That your presence, your affection for him, your time with him, your relationship with him actually changes him, actually has an impact on his emotions, on his feelings, on his heart? He loves the uniqueness of you, your particular personality, your little idiosyncrasies, the one-of-a-kindness of you. We worship a God that chose to make himself vulnerable to us. First, by coming to us in the most dependent way possible as a human baby. And then Jesus shares this parable to help us understand that this is the heart of the Father. That God is not insecure. He doesn't need us to want him or to love him or to feel okay about himself in order to be whole. But he does want our love and our affection, which makes him vulnerable. It makes him vulnerable to sorrow and rejection. So he, like us, experiences that risk. By wanting our love, by wanting our affection, by wanting a relationship with us, he is vulnerable to rejection. He's vulnerable to sorrow. He's vulnerable to walk in a room and be ignored or even disdained. And it's this vulnerability to pain that makes it possible to experience such joy at the return of our affection. Such joy at the return of our love for him. It says, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The father didn't wait stubbornly for his son to make the walk of shame back up to the house. He didn't sulk or hold grudges or find his son embarrassing. He ran to him. He threw his arms around him and kissed him. Have you ever considered personally that when you turn toward God, when you turn toward your true home, that you cause his heart to swell with so much love that he can't sit still and wait for you to walk all the way? But his response is to run towards you with joy at the sight of you. And then when the father's immediate next response, while the son is like walking up and like mumbling his pre-planned apology, kind of wallowing in his shame, head low, the father basically ignores him. He's like, whatever, whatever. Okay, you're sorry. Let's celebrate. You're here. Let's have a party. Like, let's move on. The son says, Father, I've sinned against heaven, against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, it's like he just ignores him. Quick, bring the best robe and put it on and put a ring on his finger. The son of mine was dead and is alive again. Let's have a party. And they began to celebrate. If you look back at this, it always says he's walking toward his father, but the father's filled with compassion. He starts to mumble an apology, but the father interrupts him and said, let's celebrate. We don't need to revisit every sin. I don't need you to sit in your shame and failure. The returning is enough. The taking steps toward the father is enough to fill the father's heart with joy. And I think if you can begin to lay hold of how much joy you bring the Father's heart every time you turn toward him, whether you've been very far off or you turn toward him every day in prayer, you may be freed up to experience a more joyful life yourself that every time you turn toward God, you are filling his heart with joy over you. And remember, you're turning toward the most joyful being in the universe. You're turning toward a God that loves to party, that loves to celebrate. And he throws extravagant parties. I mean, this actually is really who God is. And what he loves to celebrate the most is you. And I think the reason that many of us lack joy is because we are still hustling for our identity. We still think we have to hustle to please God, to impress him, to do stuff for him. Like the son in the story, how many times when you come before God to pray, do you imagine a God that's disappointed in you because it's been a while? Or he's angry at you? Or worse, he's just totally indifferent. He's just stoic. He's unmoved by your presence. I mean, if you think the various roles we think about with God, you think your boss, your parent, your spouse, your best friend, your brother, sister, all the ways we think about a relationship with God, if you think that they're always mad at you or disappointed in you, it's hard to experience joy. You walk around in the world like that. And so as a result, we desperately look for this validation everywhere else. We need to know, like, we're lovable, that we are enjoyable. And this can be exhausting, not just for you, but actually for the people around you. Because we begin to want and need things from people that they're too limited to give us. And then that leaves us resentful and critical, or we find ourselves manipulating or coercing, all in a desperate attempt to feel loved and celebrated and enjoyed. How often do we look at what we produce, or in my case, what I can't produce, or how our boss or spouse or parents or friends are noticing us or affirming us or attending to our needs to determine our own sense of loveliness and value? And then when we're not noticed or we're criticized or ignored, we receive that as confirmation that we are indeed failures or annoying or that we just don't matter. And from that place of fear or hurt, we tend to self-protect or we make other people responsible for our sense of self. We judge them or we hold grudges or we manipulate, all in a desperate attempt to feel better about ourselves. Or at least that's what I do. Because the truth is, our deepest longing, the one that all these other longings point to, is for the Father's approval, for the Father's love, for the Father's delight in us. We were actually created to be celebrated. We were actually designed to be joy-producing organisms. We were actually designed for that. So that longing is a God-given longing. We were made to bring joy to the heart of the Father. And our experience of the Father's joy over us is direct correlation to our capacity to experience joy in this world. I had this book when my kids were little called You Are My Joy. And I tried to find it. Like, I tried to look it up, and it's like not print anymore or something. I don't even know who wrote it. I could not find it. And I couldn't remember. I wanted to actually, like, read it to you. But it just keeps repeating, you are my joy. And then it has some other little lines, like in fall, winter, summer, spring, you make my heart sing. You are my joy. And then each page is a little rhyme. Well, later in life, that just always stuck with me. If you've ever done like a breath prayer or centering prayer, you're meant to have a word or phrase that you kind of come back to kind of recenter you as you're just sitting in the presence of God. And so I was asking God what my word or phrase should be, and I just heard him say, you are my joy. And so that's what I use for my breath prayer, and it's like God saying to me, you are my joy, and I'm saying to him, you are my joy. And that's what our relationship is built on, us, that he is my primary joy and I am his joy. You know, otherwise, how many people do you need to recognize your intelligence or your accomplishments, or you need to come to your small group or your party or to be invited to their party for you to feel celebrated or wanted and enjoyed? Because if you don't know that your eternal Father, that your Creator is filled with joy in your presence, there will never be enough. There will never be enough people to fill that void. I mean, I talked a few weeks ago about, when you're talking about parenting, that the best thing you can do for your child is to enjoy them. And this comes actually from this isn't even like a biblical thought. This is just from like psychologists, sociologists, like in the world from their studies, they found this is one of the best ways to raise kids to become resilient and have agency and have confidence. And so it makes sense that the master parent, our father and mother, our heavenly father and mother, would have created us this way, that us experiencing him enjoying us, celebrating us, delighting in us, would make us more joyful people that bring grace and health into the communities that are around us. So when you no longer have to hustle for love, when you can approach the Father without shame, without fear of rejection, when you can take a step toward him and see only his pleasure on his face as he runs toward you, you can start to grow your capacity to live in the fullness of this joy. Doesn't mean you're not going to experience hurt or disappointment by other people. We're still going to feel pain when we're ignored or rejected by people around us. That's part of the human experience. And this doesn't mean you're not going to suffer loss or painful circumstances, but it does mean you'll be facing them with a full cup, with a groundedness, anchored in the Father's joy over you. And it's from that place that we're better equipped to forgive others, to offer grace, to celebrate, to worship with gratitude, to experience joy ourselves. It's from that place we're anchored in a joy that cannot be taken away from you. I want to close our time with a little movie clip. This just popped in my head when I was working on this. So this is from a kind of a cheesy, popular movie that always comes around Christmas time. I'm not recommending it. It's, you know, racy, rated R, blah, 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 but I've watched it a bunch of times at Christmas. Anyway, it's called Love Actually, and there's a closing scene that I always love, and it takes place in an airport pre-9/11. Because for the few of you in the room that remember, you used to be able to go to the gate to greet people when they came off the airport. Before 9/11, we didn't go through so much airport security, and it would be common to come off a plane and somebody would be there with flowers or balloons or just so excited to see their loved one come off the plane. So it was really kind of sad when all that was taken away from us. So this is just a scene in an airport where people are excited and greeting somebody coming off the plane, and that picture came in my head of the Father's joy when he saw his son coming home to him. And so I want you, as you're watching this, to picture God's face, his posture, his feelings, his emotions at the sight of you. Whether you are far off and you're ashamed and you haven't prayed for a long time and you have all kinds of mixed feelings about God, and you're just turning and taking a step toward him, or you are regularly in prayer, regardless of where you are relationally, this is his posture towards you. As you take a step forward, this is his posture as he comes towards you. You know, some people say that this story should actually be called The Prodigal God. The word prodigal actually means spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully, extravagant, or having or giving something on a lavish scale. And this is actually who God is. I mean, for the God of the universe that has all power and has everything, to choose to give up heaven and join us in our place of need and suffering in the most vulnerable way imaginable. That is extravagant. And the Father's heart that throws a lavish party just because you choose to take steps towards him, to take steps to return home to him. This is the extravagant joy that is offered for you and offered to you. But we do have a role to play. The son did decide to leave the pig pen and take steps back toward his father. And so this is the starting place. We just turn toward God and we take steps toward him. So whether you've never experienced the Father's embrace or you've experienced it often, God allowed his son in the story to go and make his way in the world and gave him a free will, and the son chose to come back home to him. And the father ran and met him in delight. And so he does give us that option. And so today, as we kind of move into a time of ministry, I just want to invite you, if you never experienced God that way, God's heart and joy for you, then the invitation is just to turn and take some steps toward him. That was enough. Or if you maybe grew up like me, where for lots of reasons often felt God was disappointed in you or mad at you, and that's just the posture or indifferent towards you that you often experience when you come in to time in God's presence, I just want to invite you to come, and I felt like God wants to just shatter whatever that is, whatever that sense of rejection or shame or condemnation that's like getting in the way of you experiencing his sheer delight in you, his joy that he has over you. Because I felt the Lord today wanting just to get out of the way any of those barriers that keep us from experiencing him like this. And so regardless of where you are on that spectrum, I think the invitation today is just to take steps toward your true home. Take steps toward your Father. To experience that place in you that longs to be loved just as you are, that longs to be accepted, approved, and even enjoyed and celebrated. That invitation for you to come and receive prayer that you might experience that today. And you may have been in relation with God your whole life, but you're still just like that edge, you know? Like, I still just struggle with shame a lot. I still struggle with the sense that God's mad at me. We're just going to invite the Holy Spirit come and just kind of break that off, whatever that barrier is to you feeling that level of embrace. You know, the opening scene where, I don't know the actress's name, but she's running out to Hugh Grant, just so excited. He just takes steps off the plane, and she's just like, he's home. That you can start experiencing the Father's delight in you that way. And as we move into a time of ministry time, I also got this picture this morning, and I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I just got a picture of like a snowman melting. And there was some sense I had, I just got the word sadness. And I felt like the invitation was to a sort of a surrender into God's arms with like whatever you're carrying. So my sense was like the snowman's kind of keeping it all together, but in the Father's presence, the snowman just is melting. And letting, like, the sadness be what it is. Whatever, like, you're holding up and feel like you got to keep together. My invitation was it was safe just to melt in the Father's arms and let all of that go and just let God embrace you in that. So if that speaks to you, there'll be several of us to my left, your right. We'd love to just pray for you. Just come alongside of you and pray for you during our closing worship time.
Thanks for listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information, go to vineyardmilwaukee.com.